a regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Larry Keene, Senior Vice President, General Counsel of the National Shooting Sports Foundation, here in just a moment or two. A lot of stuff to discuss. Cash Patel out as Acting Director of the ATF. Secretary of the Army Daniel Driscoll is now the new Acting Director of the ATF. For how long? We don't know. Again, that the word acting in front of director would suggest that it is certainly temporary. But there are more personnel changes underway at the ATF, as Larry reveals. Also talking with Larry about what these tariffs might mean for the cost of guns and ammunition here in the country. Now, the Trump administration announced yesterday that there's a 90-day pause on most of the tariffs that have been put in place a few days ago. China not included in that pause. In fact, there's, you know, the trade war with China continues, with China ramping up its reciprocal tariffs on the United States. And we may see tariffs on Chinese made goods increase even further. We don't know where that's going to end, but that too will have an impact on the price of certainly ammunition and perhaps firearms as well, as Larry details. So take a look and a listen. Larry, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to talk to you, sir.
Always a pleasure to spend time with you, buddy.
And boy, I mean, there's so much to talk about. I don't even barely know where to get started. But, you know, so let's start with something. And again, I mean, things are in flux, right? Yesterday, I'm doing a live chat with Ed Morrissey from Hot Air. News broke. We got this 90-day pause on these tariffs. That was one of the first questions I was going to ask you today. And I guess I'll start there, is, you know, how are these tariffs going to impact the firearms industry? And I'm guessing the answer this morning is, we don't really know a great deal, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to gauge, right? I mean, it's on again, off again. You get whiplash trying to keep up with what's going on the tariffs front. And then I saw this morning that the EU has paused their reciprocal tariffs or their countervailing tariffs. So I guess people are going to have negotiations about what happens, but there's still some tariffs in place. So we're monitoring it, trying to figure out what's going to actually happen. From what I've heard, the 60 or so countries that are listed on the tariff, from Liberation Day, have knocked on the door of the White House or, you know, Commerce, and they want to negotiate. So there aren't staff available to have these negotiations like all at the same time. So it's a little bit like bakery, I guess, like, you know, take a number and we'll get to you. But I think that's the objective was to renegotiate trade deals to reduce tariffs on U.S. goods and level the playing field, which I think is a good thing for the U.S. generally speaking, or NSSF, you know, we've got people who would benefit from these tariffs, and we have people that are members who would be hurt by these tariffs. So, yeah. You know, it's a little bit like, you've got Audi, Volkswagen, BMW, Toyota that are members at the same time as Ford, General Motors, and Chevy are members.
Right.
Whatever position you take, you're going to offend somebody. So internally, in terms of trade association politics, if you will. So, but we are monitoring it. I think the concern that we've said is that tariffs on commodities like steel, aluminum, copper will raise the cost of manufacturing, even if you don't buy, imported commodities, you buy domestic sourced commodities, the price still goes up because as people, transition from imported to domestic, it causes the price to go up. They both go up. So there's no way of avoiding that. That increases the cost of manufacturing, ultimately reduces profitability. In price increases, to consumers at some level.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't pass all of the cost on, but you can't eat all of the cost either.
So. Right. And I was going to say, I mean, specifically, you're talking again about the raw materials. I'm curious about lead. I mean, because obviously the tariffs on China are still in place. And in fact, are ratcheting up, and who knows what China's response is going to be. But I mean,
Well,
how much, we've talked before in the past about the fact that, lead smelters in the United States are basically extinct at this
it's the
point,
same, it's
right?
really the same issue. A lot, most of the shot or shotgun shells come from, lead shot comes from China. So that would increase the cost, obviously. There aren't any smelters left. All the lead is recycled. We're trying to get a sense now of how much lead that U.S. manufacturers use is imported. Where is it imported from? So there's, it's just every day there's something else. You don't. Let's. So, I think. Tariffs are going to raise prices. Some people get, depends on whose ox is getting gored, So, and I think if there are countervailing tariffs, like the EU is suggesting, or other countries, and China has put in place, there's no pause on China, as far as I know,
Right.
that's going to constrict the export market as well. So,
Yeah. All right. And again, all of this, as you say, is in flux. And I, you know, and from that perspective alone, that's got to be a challenge, right? Because businesses like stability. They like to know, or at least have a pretty good idea of what's going to be happening 3 months, 6 months, a year from now, so they can plan.
It's a little bit like someone says, you don't like the weather in New England, just wait 10 minutes.
That's right. That's right. Well, and speaking of things that are in flux, let's talk about the ATF for a second. I mean, this is the agency that regulates the firearms industry. We've seen, I think, some good steps. The end of the zero tolerance policy announced, the review of some of the Biden administration rules. I hadn't we haven't heard anything about reviewing the frame and receiver rule, which was recently upheld by the Supreme Court in Vanderstock. I'm curious if the ATF will undergo a review of that rule as well. But the pistol brace rule, the engaged in the business rule, and I mean, my expectation is that after that review is complete, then we'll hopefully see the formal repeal of those rules. But I mean, we've got flux within the agency, right? Kash Patel was named acting director a couple of months ago. News broke yesterday that Kash Patel is no longer the acting director, and instead, Daniel Driscoll, who's the Secretary of the Army, is the new acting director of the ATF. So again, not a permanent director. And then there are other personnel changes at ATF as well, right, Larry?
Yes, we learned this morning that the long-standing deputy director of ATF, Marvin Richardson, is retiring, and so we'll see who replaces him as the deputy director. And I've heard that a number of other high-ranking ATF officials have accepted the early retirement package, and will be leaving ATF in relatively near future. So there will be, yet more change at, the headquarters level of ATF. So we'll see. It was very surprising to us to see the Secretary of the Army named as the acting ATF director. That was not on my bingo card. And so, but we have said publicly that ATF needs strong leadership. It needs to course correct and get refocused on its core mission of combating, violent crime, which is they are the premier federal law enforcement agency focused on combating violent crime, particularly involving firearms. And we want to see them refocused on that mission and not, as happened under the Biden administration, attacking the industry as the quote enemy, close quote. So we're very glad to see zero tolerance being repealed. We're glad to see the engage in the business rule is being evaluated. I'm sure it will be rescinded. That will take some time, but it's already enjoined by the courts at this present time. And the pistol brace rule, same thing. They are reevaluating that. It's also enjoined by the courts at this time. So that may be why the two of those were selected first. Engaging the business is a blatant overreach. And I think very, so hopefully, but to rescind them, you have to go through, the whole process of like notice and comment, the Federal Register, et cetera. So hopefully
Right.
they will do that. Now, they are have yet to put out the Department of Justice, that is the, response to the president's executive order on the Second Amendment. I understand that is on, that a draft or a final draft is currently under review. So I think we might see that fairly soon. And also yesterday, the Attorney General announced that she's forming a Second Amendment task force with various components of DOJ. So I think that ties into the response to the executive order. I presume it does.
Yeah.
So I think that's an encouraging sign. And that's certainly, we, NSSF was the first group to call for the Executive Office of Gun Violence Prevention to be, disbanded. So I obviously that's, effectively happened. It's, the offices have been repurposed and website shut down. So I think maybe the task force is, kind of replaces that in a sense. So we look forward to, hopefully having an opportunity to have input into the task force. If not, the memo from the AG indicates that, she has discretion to appoint others or involve others in the task force work. So, we hope to have an opportunity to at least provide input, if not to participate in the task force. There's still a lot of more work to do. As you say, the framer receiver role, we were disappointed by the decision from the Supreme Court in Garland v. versus Vandestrom. When in reading Justice Thomas's dissent, it was pretty clear to me he had read NSSF's amicus brief, because all of the arguments that he keyed in on were arguments we made in the brief. And Steve Holbrook helped us quite a bit in drafting that brief as well. So I don't know what they'll do. I think we're still stuck with this issue about, well, when exactly is something, cross that magical line or the
Right.
difficult line. They don't answer that question in the decision. They leave that for another day or for ATF to decide. And Justice Sotomayor's concurrences will go get a determination letter, classification from ATF. The problem is, and as we pointed out in our brief, is yeah, you can get that, but ATF is free to change its mind, as it has on things like bump stocks, arm braces, 80% receivers. So as we pointed out in our brief, you make a determination. The statute itself has not changed, not a single syllable.
Right.
You make a determination, people act on that, they rely upon that, they build businesses on that, they invest capital, they hire employees. And then when it becomes politically expedient, you pull the rug out from underneath them and say, oh, no, that was actually illegal all along, or that's actually a short barrel rifle, or that's a machine gun. And so that's very frustrating. Like, you need to be able to rely upon what they say. So, and there's no legal requirement that you get a classification. You should be able, with any statute, you should be able to read it, understand it, and act in compliance with the law. But that's not the case. So we'd like to see some permanency. I think personally that once ATF makes a determination, and unless the statute changes, people should be able to rely upon that determination. So
Absolutely.
we'll see. I don't know what they're going to do with frame and receivers rule, whether they're going to modify it or put out more guidance. It was interesting, and again, it was pointed out in the decision that, ATF laid out a pretty coherent explanation in litigation in New York and California by every town and Giffords as to how they determine when something constitutes a frame or receiver, right? The sort of 80% receiver question. And That was under the last Trump administration. Now, of course, that all goes out the window, and it's like, well, I don't know. Can't say with any sort of, definitive answer that, okay, that's now a frame or receiver. And to
And
me,
that's
the
been.
answer is very simple, right? Like, until it's a frame or receiver, it isn't. And until you can connect and all the other parts that make the firearm go bang, it's not a frame or receiver. So the 80%, which was always ne never an official term,
Right.
even that was wrong by ATF at the time. Until it is, it isn't. It's pretty, I mean, it's pretty, seems to me a very clear line. Until you can put all the parts on it that make it go bang, it is not.
But
And
I mean, you and I have talked about this in the past before. Like, so there is a matter of, okay, so where do you draw that line? But then there's also the question of, as you say, what is that line, right? And it doesn't just apply to frames or receivers. The ATF, I think with the pistol brace rule, same thing, right? Like, probably if you attach a brace to a pistol, the ATF's got to consider it a short-barreled rifle, but not definitively, right? The ATF's, well, we may not, but you might
right.
want to err on the side of caution and registering that with the NFA. The bright line is needed. And then there's that discussion about, okay, well, where is that line going to be drawn, right? But as you say, if everything's up in the air, and everything's so fuzzy and can be
Yeah.
changed, on a dime. Again, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, right? Businesses, no matter what industry we're talking about, they want consistency. That
And
that that
reliability, yeah,
absolutely.
absolutely.
So hopefully we get that. So I'm just curious, Larry, last question for you before we talk about the ALE standings and let you go. It's early, but the Yankees are ahead of the Red Sox. So the public comment about why Cash Patel is leaving is because he had too much on his plate at FBI, which is completely understandable. It seems to me like the Secretary of the Army, I mean, that's also a full-time position.
Yeah.
Mr. Driscoll is also going to have a lot on his plate. Would you like to see a full-time acting director of the ATF? Would that be beneficial to the industry in theory?
I think it would be beneficial to ATF. I mean, it's a Senate for confirmed position so that it would be on par within federal law enforcement with ATF. So we have said that we believe ATF needs strong leadership to help course, they need to course correct from the Dettelbach era. They need to get refocused on combating violent crime, which is their core mission. They are the premier federal law enforcement agency for combating violent crime, and stop attacking the industry as the quote-unquote enemy, which is why it's good to see repeal of zero tolerance, which is a terrible policy that hurt the relationship between retailers and the industry and ATF. I presume at some point there will be a somebody nominated to be the confirmed director, because I think you're right. I mean, I certainly hope the Secretary of the Army has a full-time job. But you need strong leadership. We're concerned about, for lack of a better term, brain drain, with other senior officials leaving the organization. I've heard some high-ranking folks have accepted the retirement packages that were offered by the government, and so we'll have to see who replaces them. We need ATF needs strong leadership. It needs to course correct. I'm sure that will happen under this administration. And zero tolerance is a step in the right direction. The chief counsel is a tremendous upgrade. Rob Leider is an extremely intelligent lawyer, so that I think will help ATF. But they've got a lot of work to do in terms of getting things sorted out. But I'm sure it's underway. We put out a statement yesterday, welcoming the Dan Driscoll is the acting ATF director. We hope to have an opportunity to meet with him in the near future. But you know, I think a lot of the day-to-day is going to have to be handled by others in the leadership team at ATF, because I
And
think
correct me if I'm wrong, but like Marvin Richardson was essentially the day-to-day guy as the deputy director, right?
he was, on the org chart number two, the deputy director, and he served in that role for quite a while. He over several administrations.
Yeah.
So, and so he's as we've heard, retiring today, or announced his retirement today. When it becomes effective, I'm not sure, but so someone will, have to be named the at least acting director, if not the deputy director. So we'll see who, either the assistant attorney, deputy attorney general selects, or whether the acting director gets to make the choice. It remains to be seen. Typically, somebody, one of the other assistant directors in a senior position would move up to, the acting deputy director.
Okay.
So we'll see how that all plays out in the coming days. So,
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like a really good opportunity to get you back on the show again in a very near future appearance to talk about the latest developments. Larry, as always, I appreciate you joining us on the program. Red Sox are what? 2 games back, a game and a half back of the Yankees right now. So there's still time. Season's early, and
very early.
damn the Blue Jays for being in first place in the AL East. So I guess we can at least root against the Blue Jays together. How about
That's exactly right.
that? All right, Larry Keene, Senior Vice President and General Counsel of the National Shooting Sports Foundation. As always, thanks for coming on the show today.
It's always fun to be with you, buddy. Thanks.
My thanks to Larry for joining us on the program. Looking forward to seeing him in Atlanta here in a couple of weeks for the NRA annual meeting. We will be there on site, booth 665, as part of the Voices of the Second Amendment that the NRA is doing. A lot of podcasters are going to be there on, I won't call it Media Row, but we've got our own little section there in the convention center where the annual meeting will take place. I will be there on site. Contributor Tom Knighton will be there as well. We'll be doing a lot of interviews. I would say if you stop by and neither of us are at the booth, just wait a little bit because one of us will be popping back in. So I hope that we'll get to see you. But yeah, hoping to get Larry on the show down there in Atlanta, along with NRA leaders like Doug Hamlin, the Executive Vice President, John Comerford, the head of NRA ILA. I'm going to try to wrangle some of the guests that are going to be part of the NRA ILA Leadership Forum on Friday afternoon. And we'll be talking, obviously, with Second Amendment advocates, representatives from firearms companies, and whoever else we find that I think would make an interesting interview down there in Atlanta. But we hope that we get to see you there in just a couple of weeks, actually, 2 weeks from today, as a matter of fact. That's when the NRA's annual meeting kicks off in the Peachtree State. And again, we'll be there in booth 665. All right, let's move now to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Louisiana. Here's the headline: sex offender on probation arrested, accused of attempted kidnapping in Alexandria, Louisiana, by the way, not Alexandria, Virginia. 25-year-old Christopher Devon Braxton, who is a resident of Pineville, Louisiana, booked into the Rapides Parish Detention Center on charges of indecent behavior with a juvenile just a couple of days ago, also charged with sexual battery and attempted simple kidnapping. He was booked as well on a charge of violating his probation, which means that he does remain in jail at this point, despite bail being set at $75,000. The Rapides Parish Sheriff's Department hasn't released a lot. In fact, they really haven't released any details about the most current crime that Braxton is accused of committing. But the Town Talk newspaper in Alexandria, Louisiana, reports that Braxton became a sex offender last year when he took a plea bargain about a year ago, April 10th. So yeah, wow, 1 year ago today, as a matter of fact, took a plea deal for a felony charge of indecent behavior with a juvenile. He was sentenced to 5 years in prison, but the entirety of that sentence was suspended, and he was placed instead on 3 years of supervised probation. Days after his sentencing, Town Talk reports, he was granted permission to continue parenting his young son. and to drive him to and from school, which of course would put him in contact, or at least in the vicinity of other juveniles. Don't know, again, a lot of specifics about that case last year, where, again, he took a plea bargain to a felony charge of indecent behavior with a juvenile, but facing some very serious charges right now, which, again, begs the question, why was Braxton's 5-year prison sentence suspended entirely in lieu of 3 years probation just 1 year ago today? All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story. Again, sort of breaking news here. Don't have a lot of information about this incident. It happened late Wednesday night in Houston, Texas, where police say a person inside an apartment shot and killed an intruder during a home invasion. Authorities telling ABC 13 in Houston, it was about 10:30 in the evening, multiple people broke in through the window of one of the apartments at this complex. Resident inside was able to retrieve a firearm, shot and killed one of the intruders. The other suspects then fled into the night. The resident and one other person who was there in the apartment, neither one of them hurt in this encounter, thankfully. Officials believe that the intruders had at least one gun, but they say as of right now, there's no indication that that gun was actually fired. But the Houston Police Department has already said that no charges are expected to be filed against the homeowner. Again, they were where they had a right to be. People who break in the dark of night are not there to give you a publisher's clearinghouse check, right? You can assume that they are there to do you harm. So that the resident well within their rights to protect themselves and others in that apartment. Authorities say the incident appeared to be an attempted burglary. Don't know if there's any relationship between the suspects and the victim here, but we'll try to bring you some updates as they become available. Finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. A story pretty close to home to me in Central Virginia, where a good Samaritan saved a child from train tracks in Waynesboro, Virginia. That's kind of up near the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's in between Charlottesville and Stanton, Virginia. It's a great little town, by the way, and apparently they've got some great people there, including Leonardo Santamaria. He was leaving work when he noticed this child walking alone on the train tracks, active train tracks, by the way. So he said he stepped out of his car, yelled out, but he didn't get a response. He said, "I was just worried. So I went over to the side of the road, yelled at the kid to see if he was okay, but the kid wasn't responding. No other adults in sight. Santa Maria and another bystander decided they were just going to follow the kid to make sure that he was safe. And then Santa Maria could hear the sound of a train coming. He said, "I had to act fast." He said, "I went down to get him out of the train tracks, and then I brought him up." He said that officers with the Waynesboro Police Department arrived shortly thereafter, were joined by the child's family. Waynesboro Police confirmed that the case had been forwarded to Child Protective Services for further investigation. Santa Maria said, "You know, to look it over, it's a good idea just to make sure everything is okay." He said, "Hopefully it doesn't happen again." Yeah, again, without knowing the details here, I don't know whether or not the parents did anything wrong. I mean, I grew up as a free range kid, and that was fine back then. So I don't know. We don't know the age of this child. We don't know if the child was allowed to be out by themselves. It's one thing if you're 12 years old and you're walking around. It's another if you're 2. Right. And you're supposed to be at home and maybe which also happened to me, by the way, when I was 2. But it wasn't a case of neglect on the part of my parents. It was just me being a savvy 2-year-old and flipping the lock on the back gate and then wandering away. Again, don't have all the details. I'm not trying to cash in on the parents, but hopefully the situation gets rectified. And I'm glad to know that that child is safe and sound, thanks to the quick thinking of Leonardo Santamaria there in Waynesboro, Virginia. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, I'm really looking forward to seeing you back here again next Monday. Don't forget, next weekend, April 19th, in Boxborough, Massachusetts, Gun Owners Action League putting on their big event celebrating the 250th anniversary of Lexington and Concord. I will be there. Colonel Alan West will be there. Doug Hamlin of NRA will be there. Adam Kraut from SAF. Dick Heller. Toby Leary, a whole bunch of folks. And I would love for you to be a part of that as well. All you have to do is go to the Gun Owners Action League website, goal.org. You can find out more information, and hopefully I will see you there in Boxborough, Massachusetts, not far from Lexington and Concord, on the evening of Saturday, April 19th. Hope you have a great weekend this weekend. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com. We'll keep you up to date on all the latest Second Amendment news and information. And until we talk again, be well, be safe, and be free.